live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, everybody. My name's Alon. This is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show.
And my name's Ara.
We're here, as always, week after week, doing the Chatterbox Video Game Show, where we talk about games and the gaming industry. Now, behind the glass over there, running the show... No, can't get him to even crack a smile over there. Well, thank you very much for preparing the show. We appreciate it, Andrew. And I want to let you know... No, can't get him to even crack a smile over there. Well, thank you very much for preparing the show. We appreciate it, Andrew. And I want to let you know right off the beginning of the show, if you guys want to call in about anything we discuss, feel free. The toll-free number across the nation, and even in Canada, I believe, is 866-536-1100. 866-536-1100. We're going to keep the lines open all night, and hope that you do call in. Now, before the show started today, I went to my friend John's. I said, listen, John, I went on the chat room, which you can get onto, by the way, by going to chatterboxgameshow.com. Went down to the chat this week, and the first thing someone said to me was, Alon, have you been playing Dead Rising? And I said, why no? I played the demo last week, but that's all. It's fantastic. And apparently one of our listeners is number one on the Xbox Live leaderboard. So hand it over to the guy whose name I can't pronounce. If you go in the chat rooms, I'm sure he'll tell you who he is. He also runs the chat room, so I appreciate it. Now, I told John, listen, this game, we played it last week, the demo, I think... You buy a bunch of crappy games. I think it's time to finally get a good game.
Was this the first time he played it?
Well, he had played the demo last week, right? But I told him, like, he bought Chrome Hounds, and I was like, that game's going to blow. And he got it, and he returned it promptly. And he got Table Tennis, and then he gave it to his uncle. And then he went out and bought a second copy so he could play with the uncle after the reason he gave it to him was because he didn't like it in the first place. So I was like, listen, it's time. We need to step up a notch here and start getting games that don't suck. And by we, I mean him, you know. And so he gets it. And that's the first thing we did. We went out. Well, first we got some lunch or dinner or whatever it was. And then we went out to go find this game. And he has an EB he always goes to, an EB Games. And they didn't have the strategy guide. Now, I'm not one for strategy guides. I'm an internet nerd. I recognize that GameFAQs.com is out there and provides all the answers I need. And so I'm like, listen, you don't need it. Don't need the strategy guide. He's the guy who likes to perfect everything. He wants to always do as well as you can do, be perfect.
Did he feel like he couldn't buy this game without the strategy guide to accompany?
Here's what happened. So we had the guy at the store call up another store and ask if they had the guide and put one on hold for Johnny Boy.
Was he put up to this by the employee at the store?
No. I was in the store saying, listen, don't get the guide. You don't need the guide. Not only do you not need the guide, I don't want to go across town to get the guide from another store. So maybe if you really want the guide, John, if you have to have it, fine. But you don't have to have it today. You don't. You could get it tomorrow. Because today is just about fun. It's just about enjoying the game. You don't need to get that guide. Please promise me you won't use the guide the first day you play this game.
What's wrong with that?
All right, so we're driving home. We're driving 10 West to get home from, like, 44th Street or something ridiculous because there's no EB Games in Central Phoenix, only, like, in every town outside of Central Phoenix. So we go out there. We come back. And, all right, we're going home. Cool. Yeah, forget it. We're not going to go to the store. And then I find us instantly on a different highway. Are you flashing the screen at me, Andrew, so that I'll bring Smart on the show? You know, he made me wait. Last week, we were supposed to have a Smart attack, right? And a lot of you noticed that he didn't come on the show. And this week he says, I want to do the show live. We want to do the show live. And so he's going to come on. And I'll bring him on now. Fine. You know, he can be pushy.
Hello?
Nathan, you there?
Hello?
All right. You're in the middle of a story, so I'm going to have to back up to my story.
Hello?
But everybody let it be known that good old
Hello?
Nathan Smart.
Hey, Nathan.
Who completely abandoned us last week. Is
And this week, apparently.
I don't know. Anyway. Now he's been disconnected, Andrew. This show is going down the tubes. All right, so back to my story here. We're driving west. We get to where we need to go, and then I instantly, oh, look, we're on another highway. I say, John, are we going to get that strategy guide? I don't quite understand. I thought we weren't getting it. No, yeah, we're going. So
John's driving, isn't
he? We drive, and he's about to get off the highway. And I'm like, no. If we're going to this Metro Center Mall or wherever it is, it's this other exit. Oh, yeah. So it's like another 5 minutes down the road. Bottom line is, we go and we get the stupid strategy guide. And so this makes me think, what exactly is a person thinking when they get the strategy guide? Especially these days, when the guide comes out the day the game comes out, and you know that, like, some guy got an early copy, was forced to write that guide in a good, like, 2 weeks with an unfinished version of the game.
I have direct experience from that, actually.
Oh, I have a friend who's written... We've had a guy on the show a couple times who's written a couple of strategy guides for Brady Games, which produces the official Dead Rising strategy guide. So the good news is, I got to see the real game being played, not just the demo. And it looks really good, just like the demo is great. The real game is great. And I didn't get to play it because I was prepping for the show. I just got to watch him play. But I'm ready to go over tomorrow after work. After I go out tomorrow, I'll be like, all right, John, I'm going to stop by. I'm going to play this game for a good 3 hours. Maybe Wednesday if I have to.
Is he going
to
make you be the co-pilot who has to read the strategy guide?
No, he's very much the guy to just let me play and sit back and watch. He's convinced that I'm some expert gamer, which he's totally wrong about. And so he'll just, like, watch me play. And without talking to me about the stuff he reads in the guide, because I'll tell him to shut the hell up.
So did he so why does he want this guide so bad?
I don't get it, and that's what I want to talk about. I want people to call me and tell me if you're the person to buy the guide for every game he gets. He buys the guide for, and I can understand wanting the guide for a particular game, like perhaps, you know, Halo. There's all sorts of technique, right, to help you hone your game. And okay, if you really want it, splurge once in a while. But to get it with every single game, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's overkill. And I think it's like holding yourself back. You know, you gotta teach the guy to fish.
Yeah. Well, how does he play these games? Does he like?
He wasn't looking at it when he was playing today.
You know, like play, because a lot of these guides, I mean, what most of them do is they're basically like step by step, everything that happens in the game. Like, okay, go left, press this button. Okay, do this.
Essentially, I started to read it in the car, and then I realized I can't really read too much because I don't want to know too much.
Right.
And so, but it looks like they step. I mean, there's like submissions in the game. And so, you know, it'll basically tell you what you have to do, essentially, and how to score big points and all that stuff. And I didn't want to pay too much attention to it for obvious reasons. But
usually most of that stuff, it's like, you know, I mean, yes, there are some, like, secret, really interesting things in games that these guides reveal, but you could probably put most of that stuff on, like, 5 pages. The other, like, 95 pages, it's just like...
Listen, I told him.
How to walk through the game, which is like where you'll be walking through anyway.
I said to him, listen, you shouldn't use this guide. Please don't use it the first day. And if you need to use it the first time you play through the game, just use it if you get really stuck and you can't go through it.
That
but
sounds
in that case,
very reasonable.
That it totally is, right? And I've done that before. Like even in one time I had to go onto GameFAQs because with God of War there was a bonus item. And I was like, I know I can get that. I can't figure out how the hell to get to that ledge. I just want to know it's eating me up inside, and I'm never going to get back to this place because I'm not going to play it a second time. So I cheated. You know, I went online, found out how to get it. Didn't affect the game, really. I already knew it was there. I feel bad about it, but whatever. But I was like, John, only use it if you absolutely get stuck. And he's like, I always get stuck in these games. I said, then you've got GameFAQs. It'll answer the question for you in 10 different ways.
Save $15.
Yeah, he's not so concerned. But... And it's fine. It's just, it's strange to me that he needs to get it every time. And I wish he wouldn't look at it at the beginning, which he didn't so far. But as soon as I left, he started reading it. So anyway, do we have Smart on air now? Do we have Nathan
Hello?
Smart?
Hello?
Nathan, can you speak closer to that mic? Because I can barely hear you.
I'm on the phone. Hold on.
On the phone with someone else?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay.
Did you call up the Mars company trying to get some candy bars to wake you up?
Is he putting us on?
No. What?
He's totally putting us on hold. All right, so do you do this? Do you read, do you get the game guides when you buy games?
It depends. Like, when I was, I'm changing rooms here. When I was playing, like, Final Fantasy a lot, I was. But that's just because I'm lazy and I don't want to have to play a game more than once.
How do you feel about this in general? Do you think that we should be buying guides and reading the guides through the first time that we play the game?
That's up to you, you know, based on how you feel about playing games. But you should never buy a strategy guide because GameFAQs.com is there. There's absolutely no reason to ever buy a strategy guide.
Yeah, but what about all the colorful clip art pictures?
Well, there's that. There's also the simplicity of holding
IGN.
In your hand.
Go to IGN. You can get 1,000 screenshots every 10 seconds.
There's certainly convenience in getting the guide, and I'm not going to dig on Brady's business because there is some value there. Right?
Although, have you seen Japanese strategy guides?
I have not.
It's incredible. I should show you one because they're like... These people who make the strategy guides in Japan, they just make... Everyone who publishes a strategy guide in America just look like a total hack. It's like night and day. It's like a work of art, practically, these Japanese strategy
guides. Well, in Japan,
guides.
People put effort into stuff. It's a totally different world. They actually try versus this country where we do our best to not do any work.
Sounds good.
So you'll have to show me one of those guides next time I go over to your place, Ara.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're going to go to break, and then we're going to talk about a few things. Last week, we didn't talk about...
Nostalgia.
Exactly, the futility of nostalgia in today's world. And there's also a few other things. The big Xbox 360 XNA disclosure that happened today. Talk about all that stuff. And of course, Nathan Smart will be with us for the whole show. Stay tuned, everybody. We're back, the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, like we do every week. My name's Alon.
My name's Ara.
And behind the glass there is Andrew. All right, now, on the air, we've also got good old Nathan Smart.
Yes.
He neglected to do the smart attack last week and said, listen, Alon, I got to take care of business this week. I got to get on the show and prove to the listeners that I love this show and that I'm part of it, and I'm going to devote myself for the entire hour. So, unfortunately... Yeah.
Just a proper introduction here, Alon.
Yes.
That's an interesting choice of music.
So Nathan, I realize it's 1 a.m. for you over in Ohio. And Andrew Henderson, also from Ohio, the great, poorly political state of Ohio.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Now, it's 1 a.m., but you should still be able to use a full voice, a full, powerful radio voice, even though you're in a house full of sleeping
people.
Well,
I can. Exactly. And their door is usually open.
Oh, boy. All right, you're going to have to step outside.
Well, I'll be fine. I should be fine.
All right, so what we're going to talk about here, last week, I brought up the question that was in the news on Joystick or something or somewhere. I think it was on Slashdot. Well, at least pointing to the article. Wherever the article was, I have no idea because I'm not really a journalist, right? I don't pay attention to those details.
And neither are they.
Exactly. You know, at UAT, I didn't learn journalism. I learned talking about games. So we talked about or started to discuss nostalgia and the futility of it, really, at least as it applies to gaming. And I guess as it would apply to any field that evolves quickly.
So right. I'm curious where you're going with this. I mean, what do you
get? Well, I was about to define or explain the fact that, like, antiques, for instance, nostalgia is valid in terms of, you know, tangible, non-technological product, right? But people used to spend hours and hours. What was the first computer made, that blue box that Gates and all of his friends from Apple were playing with? It just had LEDs and switches on it. The Altair.
Yeah, that wasn't the first computer, though.
Well, it was the first, like, consumer computer that people were messing around with.
That was, like, UNIVAC or something like that.
You know what I'm talking about. The first one that a bunch of chumps hung around with in their garage.
Altair was pretty old.
Yeah. Now, it did nothing but blink little LEDs, and then people figured out, you can make music if you put a radio near it, because there's enough interference and all this stuff. Like, they would spend hours and days and weeks on this thing. But nowadays, we have computers that can do actual stuff. And if they go back and try to mess with that, you're like, oh, look, that's neat. But
well, there's a certain quaintness to it, right?
Yeah, but you're not going to put your time into it because the nostalgia is there. Ooh, I remember it being great. But by today's standards, it's not actually great. It's just a box that can do virtually nothing. And so that's similar to what I was reading about in this article. They were saying, like, Castlevania, for instance, first Castlevania. Unique creatures, lots of items.
Right.
Lots of different worlds that you can enter or stages, right? But you go back today, and it's very, very lackluster.
Okay, it's interesting that was an example that was used because I think that's a bad example, or at least like maybe a specifically chosen example for the purposes of supporting their argument.
All right, Nathan, what's your take?
I don't know. I kind of agree that when you go back to something that you played when you were a kid or when it was brand new, and then you go back to it now and you try to tell people what's so great about it, and then when you play it and you realize, well, it wasn't as great as I thought it was. I mean, it's something that when you're younger, when something's new, it's so much better.
That's true.
I do concede that that happens in the majority of cases. I mean, it's really interesting, right? Because it's like you're, especially if it's something like a game that you haven't seen in like 10 years, mm-hmm. it's, I mean, you know, your memory just kind of like transforms and morphs over time, and it kind of just like grows into something that was much more than it really was in the beginning. And then when you finally see this game that you haven't seen in 5, 10 years, you're just like, oh.
Yeah, but now, let's imagine you're grown up, and you and your friends from junior high somehow get together in some magical universe. You're like, hey, let's go play stickball, right? Some game that you haven't played for 20 years. It holds its own, right?
Well, I guess what my point is that it depends on the game. For example, what I just described, like, I would say that I felt that way about a lot of old games. But then on the other hand, like, there were a few old games that were like, okay, you know what? The graphics are not quite as good as I thought they were, but as far as like the mechanics go and the gameplay and that experience, it's still, you know, at least to me, it's still like really astounding. I'm like, wow, you know, this is what a real game is like. None of this, you know, overproduced. Like, I mean, I'm not going to get into that now, but
I think the situation is that you just played good games when you were a kid.
Well, that's the thing. Like when, I mean, you can go back and play the first Zelda over and over again. I mean, you can play that in spurts, and it's still fun. It's not, for some reason, it keeps it fun. But if you try and go back and play something like, you know, Bayou Billy or something.
Oh, Bayou Billy.
That was bad back then, though. I mean.
Legend
of Cage.
Oh. Right. If you go and try to play games like that, it's like after 5 or 10 minutes, you know, the nostalgia has lost its appeal because it's not fun.
Yes.
But with a game like Zelda or...
See, I think you're wrong, though. I think if you went and played Zelda, you'd have the same feeling. You'd have the same issue.
No, because I have. I mean, you have when they brought them out for the GameCube.
Okay, let me relate an anecdote here.
Please do.
There's this Genesis game. Now, I know this isn't like exactly like the...
You're going to say Herzog's Vi?
You know, the catacombs of like game history here, but, you know, it's still pretty old.
Yeah.
Actually, that was not what I was thinking of, but I think that's a pretty good example, too. But okay. Not the one I will use. There is this game called Granada. Did you ever play it?
I did not.
Nathan? Mm-hmm.
No, I haven't.
Okay, Granada...
Nathan didn't actually play games, by the way, but go ahead.
Granada is not named after the country. It has nothing to do with that. It's a really, really freaking cool, awesome game. I mean, you're just like this little tank, and you go around, and you just drive around in this world, and you shoot things. And the mechanics are really simple and straightforward. Surprisingly enough, you know, I've never seen any other game have that type of mechanic before, and I played it a couple of years ago again, having not touched it for like, I don't know what, like 10 years, and, you know, yeah, I'm like, wow, you know, these graphics are a lot worse than I thought, but as far as the actual game went, as far as the mechanics went, I mean, it's a hell of a lot more fun than most of the games I see these days.
There are a couple of games that come to mind. Like, I don't know if anybody realizes that this, but Super Mario 64 for Nintendo 64, obviously. We already hit the 10-year anniversary for the Japanese release, and the U.S. release was September of, you know, 10 years ago.
God, I feel old.
If I'm correct, it might be 9 years, but I'm pretty sure because it was my senior year in high school in September when I was working for EB my first time around. And so that makes it like September 25th of 97, I believe, of 96, excuse me. And that game, 10 years old, graphics are subpar by today's standards, but because the gameplay was so astute and so, like, on level of anything you can do today, it's held its own. And I could go back and play Super Mario 64 right now and be, you know, just as happy with it as I was the second time I played it.
I could play Granada right now.
Right? I'm thinking about Assault.
Zelda right now.
You remember Assault in the arcade? It came out on, like,
yes.
Namco Volume 4.
Assault
would
cool,
also be fun right now.
But kind of gimmicky, I think,
yeah.
That Assault game.
But, I mean, it's an arcade game, right?
Yeah.
But that's one of the games I'm thinking of, a super old... that still would sort of hold its own in my brain, at least the same way it did from the beginning. But
yeah.
I still hold issue with this nostalgia thing. We got to go. We'll be back after the break, everybody.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
We're back, everybody. Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I mentioned UAT last segment, but only briefly. If you're interested in learning how to make games and design the art in the games, you should go to uat.edu. That's the website for the University of Advancing Technology. And I went there, and I graduated even. All right. We're going to talk some more. Before we get into it, though, what are we going to talk about this segment? We're going to talk about... Oh, there it is. Man, why do I keep losing my stuff? All right, we talked about nostalgia there, but now the big announcement was from Microsoft today about XNA for everybody, basically.
That's
and
right.
The ability for anyone to make an Xbox 360 game. Let's do jump into it. I'll save my announcements for later.
Well, this is, I mean, it's a pretty cool announcement, right? I mean, it's not like unprecedented in game history, but, you know, I certainly am pretty excited at the idea that, like, well, now I can make my own games, especially, like, possibly, you know, Xbox Live 360 games.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited about this, but I'm also... I gotta be very cautious, because Microsoft announced with the original Xbox that they were going to basically take under their wing certain groups of people that, like college students and whoever could prove themselves, and give them development kits. They were going to give so many, I don't remember if it was like 20 or 25 or some number of development kits away to these groups who could prove that they had, you know, reason to get them and try to see what they could do. And I never heard anything about it beyond them mentioning it at the Game Developers Conference the year that they mentioned it a long time ago, right?
Maybe they just gave them away and nobody did anything.
Yeah, I think they were just full of it. And now Sony, they did the PlayStation Net Yaroze.
Yep.
For like $700 around there, $750 or something, you could get a special PlayStation that connected to a PC, and then you could build games for it and then connect to an online community of other people building this stuff. So very similar to what Microsoft is doing now, but it involves special hardware, and only the hardest of the hardcore did that, right? There weren't very many made. And then...
Pretty expensive, too.
Yeah, it was.
All things considered.
Now, for PlayStation 2, they released the Linux kit, which worked on a standard PlayStation 2 before the hard drive ever came out publicly. They had, well, you know, with Final Fantasy XI anyway. Before that ever happened, you could get the Linux kit for $200, and it came with the hard drive, came with the network adapter, which you needed to connect to the PC, came with all the stuff you needed except a memory card to get this stuff running on Linux, and you could program in Linux, and it even had you know, instructions on the CD and stuff for how to build all these things. And it gave you access to a lot of the elements of what you would need to actually program for the system. It didn't give you a lot of access to the I/O, you know, the input-output of the machine, and there were a couple things that it limited access to, just so that, like, you wouldn't have all the information, I guess. But I have a feeling that Microsoft is going to pretty much release everything. This XNA Express, I forget the exact, like, XNA Express, and then there's going to be, so you can make... basically get a free code set, whatever it is. I don't know enough about programming to use the correct terminology here.
I'm not exactly sure what form it's going to take myself.
Basically, you get what you need to create the games for the PC, and then when you pay $99 a year, you get access to making games for the 360, and then the special, don't have an official name for it yet, but the special community area where you can get access to what other people have created for the Xbox 360, which is great. And I was discussing this with John today in the car while we were going to get Dead Rising, how cool it would be to have access to a system like this. And I know I've discussed in the past, I don't know if it was on the show, just the ability for everybody to make games or developers to make games, and then to have a special section of Xbox Live Arcade where you could just have full access to all these games that people are making and a ranking system, so then you could get access to the games and know which ones aren't, you know, crap, and without having to pay for each individual game because they were works in progress and testing ideas and stuff and weren't necessarily fully developed.
I wonder if they're going to impose any kind of standards or anything.
No,
as this goes.
No, because you can just... when that $99 gives you the chance to just share your stuff.
Right.
And so
Well, I mean, like, you know, what if your game doesn't compile?
Well, probably needs to run first. Although there's also, you're just going to be able to trade files as well, so that you can, I mean, obviously, you could trade a file. It's on your computer. You build it on your computer, so you could share it. But the compiled version is, I don't know if it's actually going to be shared through Xbox Live. I'd like to find that out. Or if there's going to be something on the web where you get it and then you put it on your 360 the way that any developer would.
So are you saying this is potentially a massive route for pirating?
No. No, because you don't get access to all that other stuff, you know, that's public.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really great idea. I just question whether or not they're going to go full force and actually release all the stuff they claim they're going to release, like they claimed they would with the Xbox.
Right. Well, you never know. I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, it's early in the, you know, the life of the 360, so they've got time.
Well, yeah, but they announced the stuff about the Xbox before the Xbox was ever released.
And what about
they also jumped on the Xbox 360 so quickly?
Well, one thing I think they've got playing for them is the extreme popularity of Xbox Live Arcade, so much so that, you know, they're saturated with game ideas and game submissions that they're not able to handle the ones that they have now, never mind new ones coming in every day.
Is that true?
Yeah. According to an interview that I read online last week.
The product seems to definitely be trickling through.
Well, they have very high quality standards, and they basically say, like, you know, once we have a backgammon game, you're not getting another backgammon game. We don't want to fill the market up with similar games. Even if a better one comes along than whatever previous type of game they have. That's why you're always seeing different types of games, and that's great.
Like an extreme backgammon, though.
Well, extreme bungee jumping backgammon?
I don't know. Something.
Yeah, I mean, I think they should be open to newer versions and be updating it, but their time is better served by choosing totally new games, and they don't want to have people dealing with five different versions of a game, and I can understand why.
Well, then why do they have 10 different Robotron games on there?
Isn't that interesting?
It's a good point. You know, one of the most popular games, you know.
They are different
Geometry
games,
Wars.
But it's, yeah, it is kind of interesting how the exact same control scheme is used for them, which is, I mean, it's a very good motif for a game, I think. I mean, I think it's underused, generally speaking, but.
Mm-hmm. So, for those who didn't know, Robotron is a game that's very similar to Geometry Wars, which is before Uno, the most popular Xbox Live Arcade game.
Which is very similar to Smash TV, which is very
Robotron
similar.
Robotron came first, though.
To Mutant Storm, is that what that's called?
Mutant Storm Reloaded, and I think also Crystal Quest, maybe?
I'm not familiar with Crystal Quest, but
I think Crystal Quest was, like, based on this really, really old, like, Macintosh SE game, which was originally mouse-controlled.
Okay.
But I digress.
Yeah. So, yeah, Geometry Wars was great, wildly popular, and so it's not crazy that they would release several more that are similar, but they do make a point of not trying to fill the market with games that are basically the same. And I haven't seen, like, I only saw Mutant Storm as a game similar to Geometry Wars, and that was different enough that I would allow it, you know?
Right. I mean, structurally, it is completely different. It's just
Well, it's a different gameplay because it's based on stages, right? Just the simple fact that Geometry Wars is just a survival mode.
Yep.
Sort of changes the dynamic of the game. But did you know, by the way, that Bizarre Creations, the people who made or released Geometry Wars, they got upset at the guy who made the PC version, which was awesome. He made
Grid
Wars.
Well, they figured that they'd get upset.
They're so similar that they're finally beaten down on him, but it took him like 6 months.
Well, is he charging for it? What are they going to do?
No, it's just because they're losing money from the sale of their game because he's released it for free on the PC, right? It's a valid claim because the game is so incredibly similar. It's just a blatant ripoff. But anyway, moving forward here. So Microsoft is releasing this grand opportunity. I hope that they follow through. And here's the reason I think they will. Because it's so popular, because there's so much interest in this product that is Xbox Live Arcade, it's basically going to do the weeding out for them. Because essentially what they're going to see is, all right, these are the games that are very popular, and they're going to produce... I'm sure they'll release a ranking system for people to discuss which games are best, right? And that's why it's important that they get it actually accessible through Xbox Live instead of just traded on the internet and then custom loaded by each user. I just don't know if they're really going to do that. But then the users are going to be rating the games and then cause the developers to want to, you know, increase their testing and all that and actually make a real game out of it. And then Microsoft can go to them, all right, you've done well. Let's release it on Xbox Live Arcade, right? And so it'll take some of the work off their backs. Meanwhile, it'll make us feel more in the game and give everybody an opportunity to develop. And that's fantastic. And universities are getting a hold of this, and it's going to be such a big move. Like, UAT, I know, is going to jump on this and immediately, as soon as this is released, have you know, at least a special topics class or something where a few students are going to get together, or a whole class or something, study the options and try to get a game together in one or two semesters, probably two or three, actually. But anyway, I guarantee it. And that's the sort of stuff that is actually really good about going to the school, where I saw all these students like create projects that were actually tangible.
Do you think then like DigiPen will do things for the Wii Virtual Console?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if it would be strictly for DigiPen, but I doubt Nintendo will jump on that, probably because they just don't have the infrastructure for it. And Microsoft has made such a point of making development easy for the system and making it very much like Windows. So you can create a game for Windows and for the 360 at basically the same time.
Well, you've gotten me excited.
Yeah. Oh, I can see the excitement in your eyes. It's going to be awesome. And they even have an option for you to then turn the game commercial. If you do well enough, they said for less than $1,000, definitely less than $1,000, you'll be able to actually license it to sell for real. And so clearly they're thinking that these games could go to real production. And it's great that they'll be able to do this. I want to see some college students at UAT and all the other schools actually making games that they can sell. We're going to be back after the break, talk about some more stuff, everybody. 866-536-1100 if you want to call in. All right, back again, everybody. Chatterbox Video Game Radio on the air for the last segment tonight. And we're going to talk about... Are we done talking about the 360 and their achievements?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so in a second... You think so?
Yeah.
All right, you sounded like you were going to jump in again.
No,
let me stop you.
No, I just got confused because you said achievements.
Oh. Yeah, look at that. I'm mixing topics. Xbox 360, whatever we were just talking about with the XNA and the development.
Yeah.
What we're going to talk about now is achievements in Gamer Store and that stuff. And we actually have a special guest here to discuss something very relevant. But before we do that, I want to get to something that is important to me. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be in Seattle doing the Chatterbox Treasure Box show, the second annual Chatterbox Treasure Box. It went over so well last year that I was asked back, or at least let back, into the Penny Arcade Expo. And actually, as an official guest, we're going to be doing the Chatterbox Treasure Box from the small theater Saturday morning, 11 to noon. So if anybody listening to the show isn't actually going to be at Penny Arcade Expo, definitely go there. And I still need to find three contestants for the show. Usually I get them from the floor, just find people who want to do it. So if you're interested, you can always email me, and you might be able to be a guest. And there's prizes for all the guests, winners or not winners, and people in the audience. Everyone gets to win. So it's really a fun time. It's basically like a Jeopardy-style game show. It's going to be fantastic. And I don't know if Gabe and Tyke are actually going to go watch it, but I know that Rob from Penny Arcade and even the lady from Nintendo I was talking with the other day is going to go watch it, so I'm all excited. It's going to be really fun.
Awesome.
And I'm even thinking I want to do like a Chatterbox party up in the hotel room, because I have a room all to myself, so Saturday night maybe we'll have a big bash.
Yeah. You should have like a special list.
Yeah.
Invite only.
You're not invited because your punk ass isn't coming.
Because my punk ass, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, if anyone's going to be there, definitely email me and let me know you're going to be there, and we'll have some sort of Chatterbox meetup. And if you want to get in on the show, I might even be able to test you and see if you're good enough for my hot gaming trivia. And of course, show, I think 135, whatever the Monday is following the show, the Penny Arcade Expo, I mean, will be a recap of the Chatterbox Treasure Box number 2. So anyway, we want to talk about Gamerscore. This is actually a topic that you were bringing up to me earlier, Ara.
Yep.
And so what exactly are your thoughts here? What is it you want to talk about with the Gamerscore?
I almost feel bad because this just seems to be such an easy target. You know, on Xbox 360, we have these things called achievements where, you know, if you kind of fulfill some predefined goal in the game, then you get, you know, a certain amount of points. And these aren't like points from the game, these are like Xbox 360 gamer score points, right?
Yeah, we're all familiar with the system at this point.
So, all right. So, the thing is, like, I don't understand what the point of this is, because all it really measures is, like, okay, I played a lot of games. You know, I mean, you'll have, like, you know, in one game, you'll have, I don't know, like, you know, walk up to the door and you get 300 points. And in another game, it's like, I don't know, something like Ridge Racer 6 or something, like, beat this really, really difficult car to beat and, you know, that you can only get to after playing the game for 50 hours and you get, like, 25 points.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's... This could never be expected anyway, but there's no standardization. So a point in one game means one thing, and a point in another game means something completely different.
It's definitely a geek ranking, like a loneliness ranking.
It is. It really just measures just how many different, like how much you've been playing a variety of games, right? I mean, because even if you play a lot of games, if you just play the same games over and over, your score doesn't go up by much.
Right? Well, no, but I mean, if you have a high score, you're definitely playing a lot of games. And just, you could play one game and play on and on, because certain, I mean, games will have a lot of achievements in them. For instance, Dead Rising.
Right.
Like, each person you save.
But they cap each game, right? They can only have, like, up to 1,000 points.
Per game?
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was an official cap, but
this is
it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, it's kind of insidious in a way, isn't it? Because the only way to really increase your score is to keep buying games.
Yeah. Do you think that's something that wasn't completely planned out?
I don't think they sweated the details really. They're just like, this encourages people to buy games. This is a good idea.
Yeah, no, that was definitely well thought out. What were you saying, Nathan Smart?
Well, you can just rent games.
Well, yeah, that too.
You can even just bring game saves over and unlock them that way too.
What do you mean you can bring over game saves?
Like if you... you can, like, give your friends game saves and then load them into yours and then just turn on, you know, play the game and you'll have those unlocked too.
Wait, have you actually done that?
I was listening to the GameSpot, you know, the Hotspot podcast, and they talked about it on there.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that you could actually do that, because I thought that they actually put in a mechanism in the system where if there was, like, a game save that belonged to a profile, you couldn't move it to another profile.
Well, it might be, you know,
I don't think it would unlock those gamer score points. You have to actually earn those in the game.
It might be certain games that it's doing for, and maybe that's what they were talking about.
I think that's
like
a loophole.
Like certain broken games?
Yeah, that might be the case, but I just know that that's what another thing, because that was one of the things they were talking about, saying... Please put some mechanism in there, like you just said.
All right. Well, I'm going to introduce another concept here, possibly a downside. We have a guest on who's I mentioned earlier. He's number one on the leaderboard, he claims, in Dead Rising. I'm going to take his word for it.
How many days has this game been out?
Like a week, right? But clearly people are playing this game a lot. And there's a downside, apparently, to doing well in these games. And we're going to let him explain it. So I'm going to bring on Matt. Matt, who's known as some name I don't know how to pronounce in our forums. If you want to go to chatterboxgameshow.com, you can actually go onto our live chat room and talk with everybody. He's there all the time anyway. So, Matt, you're on the air with Nathan and Ara and myself.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, as far as pronouncing goes, my chat room handle is going by Amakuli.
Amakuli.
My Xbox Live tag is Lymphodite. I just like terrible spelling because it's hilarious to hear people try to pronounce it online.
Yeah, your gamer tag is ridiculous. I have no understanding.
Yeah.
I don't think any vowels. It's just all X's and Z's and Y's and stuff.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. But I usually end up being called X guy, so that works for me.
All right, so tell me, what is the downside of getting really high on a leaderboard, which is essentially the same as a gamer score, although I know they're totally unrelated.
Well, in a way, it's a bit more of an achievement, I think, to get onto the leaderboards itself. Being that you aren't just turning points and pumping your score up, people are actually seeing you and they check their own scores. But the downside, I believe, is that once you're on these boards, when you're high up on them, people are continuously looking for tips from you. Today, I must have gotten somewhere around the range of 50 or 60 messages from people, continually asking for friend requests and chat requests, sending me messages, asking me questions about the game, wanting to know how to do one thing or another, something really mundane as simple as walking through the storyline of the game.
You're a popular guy.
Excuse me?
You're a popular guy.
You're getting all honesty.
Nathan Smart asks that if you're complaining about having friends.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if they talked to me first so I knew what they were after, but they just send me requests. And some of them get all indignant and actually yell at me afterwards if I don't actually respond or accept it immediately.
Well, look at the upside of this, because really, people are like making new relationships and meeting chicks over MySpace. Maybe this is your MySpace. Maybe you're going to meet some zombie chick.
No, it could be, but so far it's all been guys. I don't know if there's as many women who are as successful as zombies as the guys are.
Actually, I have a question. Do you find that you're continually pressured to keep playing over and over in order to maintain your position?
I'm not too terribly worried about it, honestly. I've been on the first place now for about 2 days, and that's probably why I'm getting so many messages. People think I'm cheating or something, but I just had a lot of patience, and my system didn't freeze, which has been a problem for a lot of people.
Well, do you have it sitting inside of a refrigerator?
No, my room is generally cool. There's good air conditioning in the house. At any rate, no, I don't really feel pressured. I'm not worried about somebody overtaking me. In fact, with your talk about player's guides earlier, I'm personally against them, but I'm currently writing a fact relating to surviving the survival mode. People leave me alone. So I've got an easy answer to send them to.
So you could just say, go read my fact.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that this thing will help somebody get past me who wants to spend more than 2 days or system on straight and playing it constantly. And
yeah.
They'll get past me, and then people will stop bugging me.
I'm assuming you're a college student who has time over the summer to play games.
No, I'm unemployed right now, but...
Just as good!
Yeah,
just as good, my friend.
I'm bored a lot.
All right, I really want to go play that game. Listen, it's the end of the show. I appreciate your calling in. Very relevant topic.
Thank you.
Go on to chatterboxgameshow.com, enter our chat room, and you can talk to all of us during the week when we pop in. Matt's there often, under the name Emma Cooley, like he said, and he'll kick you out if you're a jackass. Anyway, we're going to be back next week, and like I said, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be at Penny Arcade. Definitely, if you're going to be there, email me, and if you actually want to be on the show, you're welcome to try out by talking to me, and I'll figure out a way to see if you can get on. We'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.